those of us who use cell phones, computers, various word processing functions, programs, are familiar with a function that in some ways is very useful and at times is very annoying or worse. So if we start punching in a message and we put in 1, 2, 3 letters, and before we finish the word, there's a word there. Sometimes it's the word we're planning to put in, and sometimes it isn't. Sometimes, because of the speed of what we're doing, we don't even notice that the word is a little bit different than what we wanted to write. Sometimes it's significantly different, and if we send the message or type the document or put in the phone number, we end up not accomplishing what we wanted, but sometimes just the opposite. It gives us a phone number of someone who is not at all who we're trying to call, and who's maybe who we don't want to call. Or it says a word, it puts in a word that isn't at all our intention. But we overlook it in the speed of what we're doing and in the habit of trusting the device, or having learned from past experience, not trusting the device to create the correct message, create our intentions. I'm not sure what you would want to call this device: self-asserting, self-correcting. Sometimes this, if you excuse me for blaming them, this Google habit gives us documents that really don't do us a service, or gives us messages that don't do us a service. But in the service of speed and helpfulness and even the use of the common and ordinary instead of the particular, that word, phrase, name, phone number that we're trying to use, these devices enable us to move faster and sometimes with results that we then have to deal with. We could call this self-correcting, self-asserting. There's other names for these programs. I suppose you would call them programs. Sometimes they're just little widgets of different sorts. I'm sure if I ask Mushin, he can come up with other names for these devices. When they were first, not devices, these patterns, programs, etc., when they were first came out, it was wonderful. It was considered a great help. You can type so much more quickly. You could get correct spellings that you couldn't remember or you might otherwise have problems with. You would come up with words that you were on the tip of your tongue or mind or fingers but didn't quite come, and lo and behold, they're there. You could find long-lost names and phone numbers or text addresses or email addresses that you hadn't ever thought of. And of course, on various other media, whether you start with something simple and old like Facebook and go to Twitter and go to all sorts of other places, this becomes ubiquitous and almost expected and accepted and the norm. This, in some ways, is very much something that must have been some old Zen master that informed them of this, or Zen mistress, if I use that word. But the Zen master is a non-gendered word, I hope. So, because this is a habit that our practice ancestors from the Buddha onward were talking about. This is what we're asserting about when we say caught in self-centeredness or caught in self-centered dream, or say poisons of greed, anger, because these are in a similar sense widgets, if I use that word. Excuse me for being technically wrong if it is wrong. These assert themselves with just the slightest hint of what's occurring either so-called internally or so-called externally, whether it's in terms of our fingers producing letters or numbers or events in the world with just a glimmer of similarity triggering us to interpret them in terms of, oh, they're attacking me. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, I've got to start thinking about that. Just the slightest hint. And our strategies are set off, or our fears and misinterpretations of reality, our self and other dreams are revealed and justified. See, in a way, this is what our practice is pointing at. Not in the devices, but we all know the troubles those can cause in life, those habits and mishabits, now that's not a word, but can cause in our life on minor levels and major levels. But in terms of our actual human functioning, this occurs. When and how we hear things from others, and right away we have a story about what that means, or even more, how that is or isn't accurate for me, how that makes me feel or should make me feel, or must indicate how they are feeling towards me, or, and you fill in the or. The tendency to, from a slight glimmer, for us to interpret and react is a built-in property of this thing called life. Our life, you could say, built in with certain even dualistic tendencies, if I explain it that way. Dualistic sense of self and other, and therefore what comes of that. But even more, in this cause and effect that we are, events, whether in the general atmosphere or in the words that people use or in the behavior that they manifest, or even simply in our perception of the behavior of the universe or the behavior of our body, so to speak. This tendency of self-asserting, self-interpreting, self-distorting, self-rationalizing arises. And just as with various devices, it's originally merely a power or an ability, but you could say just a property and a that allows us to function appropriately in the circumstances of life, to take care of ourselves in dangerous situations, to respond to events in a very quick, skillful way. And yet, one of the aspects that we all live with is, using the larger rubrics of greed, anger, and ignorance, this can also be distorted into ways that gets us in trouble, creates trouble for us and for others, and doesn't accomplish what we want, but if anything, accomplishes the reverse of what we want and leads us and others to behaviors that harm, that cause suffering. This occurs on all sorts of levels. I've just laid out some general, you could say, parameters, general broad outline of this. But if we attend to our life, if we attend to the practice of noticing, experiencing, or go the other direction, experiencing, noticing, this allows us to start seeing what is happening and what is creating separation between us and the life of the universe, us and the beings we want to be and are close to. All sorts of Buddhist practice, in one sense, or in many senses, attends to this. From practices which exist across many different Buddhist and practice traditions, and of course even non-Buddhist traditions, because this has to do with being human, where we attend to breathing, allow breathing to help assist us in being this present moment. Noticing where we're caught up. What we could call concentration forms that'll keep us present so that the automatic self-asserting, I'll call it that, tendency doesn't go unchecked, doesn't take over. this is just a few of the ways that different forms of practice enable us to work with this human tendency, this built-in quality. I wonder if we could bring a patent suit against Google or whoever, whoever developed these devices, but probably not, because it's being human. We could notice this in movement. We could notice this in mental functioning and physical functioning and all the various artistic developments of humans. I know we have a baseball fan in the rooms, so I'll mention, we might not all know this, but in baseball, when the pitcher's throwing the ball and the batter's there, the batter almost has to begin their swing before the ball leaves the hand of the pitcher, because the ball is moving so quickly and our muscles and mind and body have to move so quickly in order to hit the ball. I say almost because I don't know the actual numbers, but so I've read. I cannot attest to this through actual scientific experiments, but my reading has led me to come to that conclusion. And there are people who have this ability, despite the fact that a ball is traveling 70, 80, 90 miles an hour over an area which is, let us say, 90 feet. And the amount of time from when the eye and brain can see the ball leaving to when a swing has to occur is too short unless the swing starts even before the ball has departed the hand. And yet there's the ability to adjust that. But so I've read. But there are many other ways that we can see this in, whether you talk about in martial arts and dance and music and hearing and responding when one is playing in a symphony or in a group of musicians who respond back and forth. Actually, this function is marvelous. It makes us, enables us to do all sorts of things together, enables us to do things going beyond the so-called personal private, enables us to be in connectedness that we are with other beings, and of course enables us at various levels to be in conflict with other beings, and also to do things like hunting and so forth, and fishing. And yet this ability, unfortunately, very unfortunately for us individually and together as a species, enables us to create all sorts of troubles and harms for ourselves and others. All sorts of ways where what's skillful and useful becomes something that's harmful and creates suffering. But practice gives us the tool to, in a sense, channel this, in a sense, develop the subtlety in our being to sense when this is something that's skillful and when it's inappropriate, when it's something that causes harm, enables us to, in a way, let this go of this almost built-in habit of being human, so that we can be this if I say, much bigger sense of being human, of being alive, of being this world. Each of us has to do this for ourselves in our own ways, and there's never an end to it. As Dogen says, this awakening goes on endlessly. In part because this arising, passing that is our life goes on endlessly, this stream of what arises and what passes, what events inside, outside manifest and become our opportunity to function as the universe or our opportunity to create trouble. So, I want to encourage all of you to reflect on your own particular practice, not just you, us, myself, and every one of us, the ways to see, keep on seeing the ways when fear, entanglement, misapprehension, strategies, could use all sorts of other words, arise that for a moment blind us to who and what is, and instead assert a self-asserting habit that might create trouble unless we do what's called for as our practice. What's called for as our practice in all sorts of realms of this hour that is who you are, that is what we can do, that, and there are myriad ways that we can function. Some of them are seemingly very, very subtle, and some of them are seemingly very gross, and gross in the sense of large and obvious, in which we can do what's skillful to manifest the universe that we are, to manifest the bodhisattvas and the compassion that we are and are able to encourage and nurture in ourselves and others. Okay. In a way, as I said, this is something, if you find what I said useful, it's something to reflect on in terms of your own ongoing life, functioning life practice. I'm certainly willing to talk about this with you individually, and I'm sure Mushin is, and other people are as well. And you can reflect on it for yourself, and even see how it connects with things that various ancestors have said. Buddhist ancestors, Dogen, Rinzai, the sixth ancestor, Shakyamuni Buddha, or various other sources and beings who show us how we can live in a compassionate way to be the universe that we are and to serve all the beings that we encounter. Thank you.